Hello, everyone. Welcome to Awaken Your Soul's Journey, the podcast that explores the transformative power of grief. I'm your host, Angela Clement, and I'm here to guide you on a profound journey of healing and self-discovery. Each episode, you will be introduced to experts, authors, and individuals who have experienced grief firsthand to share their stories, insights, and wisdom. Together, we will explore many facets of grief and shed light where there is darkness. Throughout this podcast, we will explore different tools and techniques that can support you in your healing process, from mindfulness and meditation to creative expression and spiritual practices. We will provide you with a diverse range of resources to help you navigate your grief. Whether you have experienced a tremendous loss or simply want to gain a deeper understanding so you can support someone else, this podcast is for you. So if you're ready to embark on this awakening journey with us, make sure to subscribe. Together, let's explore, learn, find healing, and embrace the transformation that awaits us. Welcome. Thank you for joining us today. I have a very special guest with me. His name is Rod Peterson. And Rod is a Hall of Fame broadcaster. He spent 20 seasons as a play-by-play broadcaster in the Canadian Football League and Western Hockey League. And he now hosts the nationally syndicated Rod Peterson Show on Game TV and WQEE Radio. And as a person in recovery, Rod is also a licensed certified sober coach and interventionist in the fields of sports, entertainment, and military. So thank you, Rod, for being here today, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Angela. And let me say thank you for the work that you're doing for people. It is a very, very, very wonderful field that you're in and needed.
Yeah, well, thank you, and you as well. So just tell our audience a little bit more about how you got into the work that you do.
Media or the recovery coaching?
Well, let's just do both, however it fits.
Okay, well, I grew up on a farm near Milestone, Saskatchewan, and all I ever wanted to be was a broadcaster. So I'll make this as quick as possible.
Yeah, no problem.
And while I'm still a broadcaster, I've been doing it for this is my 36th year in the media. And it's been a very windy road, like a lot of ours are. But I just passed 9 years sober on Saturday. It was my 9 year sober birthday. And I guess I kind of realized, you know, it was about the 2013 Grey Cup that I was in the booth going, this is awesome. It's the greatest day in Saskatchewan history. But I don't feel like I'm doing anything particularly noble. Like I'm calling football games and everybody loves it, but I don't feel like I'm helping humanity here. That was 2013, you know, and then I faced an intervention in 2015, got sober. And then about 6 months into that, my counselor asked me to go public with my story. Or he said, would you consider going public with your story of recovery? And I'm like, I was so screwed up, Angela. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, sure. You know what I mean? I didn't really realize what he was asking or how big it would become. Right. But I went public with the story. And then that just opened the door to people from all across Canada, the strangers coming to me for help. I would assume you would understand this given what you do, but I'm like, I don't have any training. I'm just a drunk, you know? And I didn't realize until I delved really deep into my own background, my own soul, my own energy, that I wasn't just dealing with alcoholism. Like I was dealing with other like severe mental illnesses, nothing crazy, but OCD, ADD, generalized anxiety disorder, clinical depression, all these things. I didn't even know, right? So I'm like, I'll help you, but I'm not trained to help you. And my counselor is like, well, go get the training then. So I went and got like literally everything. So addiction treatment specialist, interventionist, as you mentioned, but grief, trauma management, grief, trauma, stress management certification, all those things. So I can really help people. And so I think what happened was with the broadcasting, because I know you want to get around to the Humboldt tragedy, people, victims' families, survivors came to me, and I'm like, why are you coming to me? And like, we don't know. We just felt pulled to talk to you about this. And at that time, I didn't have any grief therapy instruction either, or any, you know, but I'm a human. Right. So we'll get through this. And through a combination of working together, I went on to get my certification in that. So I guess my answer to sum up your question is the media and the recovery all kind of meld into one. You know, that's what made people feel that I was approachable. They felt that like they knew me, even if they didn't know me, you know, and I'm the type of person that you don't need to fear me. Like I, you know, and that's where we're at today. And here I am in Florida, which is another story.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think our lives kind of know the direction that we're going, and you had to have that background in order to be able to do what you're doing now. And you recognize that it wasn't fulfilling you the way it was, you know, you recognize that there had to be more. And so how amazing that you stepped into this. I mean, it must have been a little bit scary stepping into it, you know, feeling like you weren't adequate, and then finding out that actually you could help others.
Have you done any work in the recovery field at all?
No, so far it's just a grief certification. And
well, that's enough. Yeah. That's enough. But the very first person that came to me for help, I got asked by the chaplain of a hockey team to sit down with one of their players who'd gotten in a lot of trouble while on substances. And I was like, I don't have any idea how to help this kid. But he was sitting there trembling in front of me. And I'm like, I have to do something. So I pulled out the Alcoholics Anonymous big book, as we call it. And I read him how it works in the 12 steps. It was totally wrong, but I didn't know what I was doing. And then in the case of the Humboldt tragedy, I'd been sober 3 years by that point. The guy doesn't mind me saying Chris Beaudry, because he speaks on it. He was assistant coach.
Yes.
Who was on the bus, but wasn't on the bus for other reasons. He called me. He didn't know me. 2 days after the crash, my phone rang. It came up as Humboldt's Ask on my phone. I'm like, who could this be? And it was Chris. And he says, Rod, I need to get out of Humboldt for a while. Can I come and stay with you in Regina? I said, yeah, yes. What are we going to do? And he goes, there's a reason I lived and they didn't. And I think you can help me find it. And I'm like, okay, let's go. And I hung up the phone and I said to my wife, tell the kids to clean up their rooms. We have company coming. And she goes, well, who is it? And I told her, and she goes, well, you don't know him. You're going to have a stranger into our house? And I said, he's a hockey coach and he's a farmer. If I don't know him, I don't know anybody. Mm-hmm. So he came down. We spent some time together and we went to some AA meetings together because he's in recovery. His, I think it was his 4-year sober birthday, was the day before the crash. Oh. And jump ahead. I mean, this is your interview, not mine. But together, we put our heads together, and I think it just came through me. By the way, I'm not doing anything special other than just, you know what I mean? I opened my mouth and words came out. And I said, I think, Chris, what it is you are not going to crack. You're a symbol of strength for all those families that you're a guy in recovery, and you're not cracking because of this. They're going to look to you for strength. That's going to be your badge to wear when you go back to Humboldt or what the hell was this town? St. Francisca, some tiny little town. St. Brew. I'm sorry. St. Brew.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And like a year later, it was coming up on the 1-year anniversary of the crash. And I didn't know whether he'd be okay or not. So I called him and I said, are you okay, Chris, as we come up on the anniversary? And he goes, I don't have time to talk. I got to go help this family and that family. I'm jumping in the truck. I'm taking off. I'm like, good. And I had people say, do you know that that's was the reason? I said, I don't know. That's what he thinks. That's what he believes. That's what's, yeah, I guess. So that all just, you don't get training for that. You know what I mean? I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. And we walk into things like this, what I'm doing. I mean, I did not dream of being, you know, having a podcast and talking about grief. That was never a lifelong dream of mine, but yet here I am and enjoying it. And so, yes, we do, I think, have a purpose in life And we do find that purpose when, and sometimes through really adverse circumstances.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the way. It is important to get the training because, as you know, one wrong word, one wrong sentence, and for somebody in our position can cause a lot of damage. I mean, one of the first things I learned was don't say that you have been in their shoes because you haven't. Who's ever been in the shoes of you've had 16 people around you killed? Nobody's ever been in that. You know what I mean? So it's just, you know, that's, I'm sure it's all the same things you do. Reassure them that they're safe. Reassure them that they have no control over what happened. And it's almost callous. And I don't, it's callous to say find a silver lining because there's no silver lining in that. There isn't, you know, but if you can somehow find a message or be a symbol of strength and hope, that's as good as you're going to find for something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with grief and tragedies like that, there's so many really, really strong emotions that come with that. And I think for people, it's knowing what to do with that, because we often try to numb, right? You know, like we're scrolling through our phone, or we're shopping like crazy, or we're eating like crazy, or, you know, we're drinking alcohol. And there's all those ways to numb those emotions. But in the end, we really don't heal until we face them. And sometimes it's tough.
But it was Chris himself, Chris Beaudry, who said to me, he goes, you don't begin to heal until you look the pain right in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole thing, is I often say I get as much or more from the people I deal with than they get from me, or we do it together.
Yeah.
You know, all those things that you just said all make you feel good for a short period of time, mm-hmm. right? So we all, you know, that, and that's, I handled, that's why I laugh. And I think my haters laugh harder, that why would anybody go to Rod? He screwed up everything he's ever touched. That's a fact. I handled everything really poorly when it was thrown at me, whether it be stress. I've had a lot of tough things too. Just running to drink was always my way, run away. And until, you know, once you eliminate that and say, that's not an option anymore, what are we going to do now? You have to face it, whatever that is. You know, and again, you know all those things. When I went to get my training in New York for the intervention training, this was quite a day. But we were sitting in a conference room in downtown in Times Square. There was 20 of us getting the training. And they're like, let's go around the room and say what we all do for a living besides this. And of course they went all the way around. I was the last one, you know, and one lady, there was clinic, there's recovery treatment centers, counselors, doctors. And one lady was, she goes, I deal with victims of child sex trafficking. And the whole room just went, oh, the air went out. Right. Mm-hmm. Got to me, and they said, what do you do? And I was like rocking back and forth. I'm like, I'm a football announcer drunk from Canada. I have no idea why I'm here, but thank you for having me. Like, I was so anxious. Mm-hmm. And lady that was the office person that was working with Earl, the guy that was putting, she came over and she rubbed my back and she said, are you okay? What's wrong? And I said, I don't belong here. I don't even know why I'm here. And she goes, no. She goes, you were invited here for a reason. She said, this is happening in your life. Just get out of the way and let it happen. And from that moment on, I just got this warm feeling over me, and it was like summer camp. Those were all my friends. I didn't want to leave at the end of the day. In the morning, I couldn't wait to get there. I felt like a kid, you know? And in a break, I went up to the lady that was the counselor that worked with child sex abuse trafficking. I said, can you please tell me how you deal with them? Because I can't imagine of anything worse. And she goes, well, you don't ever get over it. You learn to deal with it. So over the course of the weekend, all these little things were sticking with me. I'm like, I'm here to take this back to where I'm going and spread that to everybody that I'm dealing with. Because it doesn't have to be child sex trafficking. It could be anything. right? But there, you may, everybody's trying to think there's some finite closure, and there isn't. And, you know, you said in my bio there, dealing with the military, I was sitting with the chaplain for the Navy, they call him Padre. Jim is his real name. And we had this discussion, just like you and I are having now. And he goes, I don't know what closure is. I've never seen closure. I don't know what it is. So everybody's searching for that. And they feel like until they find it, they're not going to be better. And it's like, what if you knew that it was never coming? That you need to deal with this. That really opens a lot of people's eyes. You know, and these are the discussions I'd rather have. See, you know, before you started recording, you brought up the rider thing. Probably every day in the last week, I was asked, what do you think of the riders? You know, in the off season, I'm like, I'm not thinking about them. I have not quite realized how to answer that question. Although I was dealing with my spiritual life coach on Saturday, and she helped me a little bit with what to say in those situations. I don't know what to say. I don't want to be rude.
Yeah.
But that's where my head is, or my focus, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And something happens in that time of crisis when you start to face the pain. And that's what happened to me. It really forced me to look at myself and see who I am now, because I'm not that person I was before. And it's, well, for a while, it's really tough because you have no idea who you are. I mean, I can see you sitting in that meeting going, what am I doing here? I don't even know who I am, right? I don't know why I'm here. And then your life changes, and then you find this sense of purpose and service. And then when you look back on what you used to do, it's just not there anymore. It's like the chapter has closed.
It certainly has for me. And the tough part is the people either don't want to accept it or can't accept it. Or, you know, that's part of the reason why I'm in Florida, because in Saskatchewan, you know how big the riders are. So,
yeah. Yes.
You know, if you don't really want to talk about them, you're in the wrong place, you know. But I was just saying to Serena the other day, I was like, 99% of the people that come to me for help are people that know me from the past role. So, along with any, that was a great part of my life, but that's not my life now. And I just think that set me up for where I am now. That's what I think. I don't know. I'm just going with it, as the lady said.
Absolutely. And I can totally relate. I mean, I used to teach distance learning classes, and so getting on the computer seemed a natural fit, right? And so if I hadn't had that background, I would be struggling a lot more right now.
Yeah, and the thing is, I never, ever fought it. I mean, I don't have a problem. Actually, I love helping people. Up until the last 2 years, I couldn't really get over the crappy things that happened to me. And we talk about this in the 12-step meetings a lot. I'm like, some of them were my fault. A lot of them weren't my fault. But the fact of the matter is they're in the past, right? So how do we move forward, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's really important. How do you move forward? You know, because you mentioned closure and people waiting for closure in order to move forward. Well, it kind of, you take it with you. And not to say that I feel burdened every day because I lost my husband. I don't feel that way at all. But I take all that love and I take all of the good memories with me. And I feel like they're an asset in what I'm doing now. Not a burden, not a sadness that clouds what I do. And I think there's a difference there.
Well, I've learned a lot, and I'm really appreciating our talk now, because I don't have a lot of talks like this. You know, and I'm still a lot quite sports focused, you know. But all these things, there's a reason they stick with you. I mean, what do they say? You get 60,000 messages a day or something, somebody said, thrown at you. That seems like a lot, but I could see that it being a lot. Why do certain things stick with you and others don't, of all the things? And one thing that stuck with me always was you don't need to let your husband go, but you need to let the pain go.
Yeah.
Mm. Whatever thing is that you need to let go, you're not letting him go. And the other thing is it's important to have a strong network in what we do. Like with that Humboldt thing, I had EMT workers coming. I had clergy coming to me, RCMP. They were burnt out. And I was like, when the support people need support, we're at a different level of grief.
Yeah.
And trauma, because they kind of go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. But you know, the other thing is, I sit here and go, well, I was an alcoholic. I mean, that's nothing compared to you losing your husband, which it's in my mind, it's not. But I have a friend in Saskatoon named Alan Kaler, and he calls himself a sober consultant. And we talk about these things all the time. And he's the kind of guy that when we get together, hours go by. Because when you find that person that you can talk with, and nobody else understands this stuff. But he goes, don't compare your pain to anybody else's. Your pain is just as important to you. So, or that, and I don't minimize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and because as long as you continue to say, I didn't have 16 people close to me killed, so what I'm dealing with isn't that big a deal. No, you didn't, but it's still a big deal to you. And until you come to grips with it, you're going to struggle. I have probably my very best friend was in a car crash. Dad died when my friend was 10, and he's now 60. And in rural Saskatchewan, Red Road, and I said, you know, have you ever gone back to the place where the crash happened? He goes, I can't. And I said, well, you've been carrying this for 50 years. You know, maybe if you go down, I'm not going to tell you to, because I don't know what's going to happen if you do. I don't know. I would go down that road, though.
Mm. Yeah.
But this, I don't think he has. I don't tell anybody what to do. You know, I talk about my own history and what might help, but in the end, they have to make their own decisions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I just had a conversation with Mary Frances O'Connor, who's like a grief specialist. She mentioned that how the brain needs to learn, and sometimes we have to step into those new activities in order for the brain to be able to understand what it's like to be there without your loved one. And until you do that, it the brain just continues to think that. You know, it's an interesting process that she brought up in the last interview. So I think that's interesting that you mention it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, at intervention training, when the lady was rubbing my back, calming me down, she goes, all these people here have to unlearn everything that they've learned because we're teaching a new strategy. She goes, you're a blank canvas because you're ahead of everything. New things are being discovered. And one of my biggest problems is people that are stuck in the old ways, you know. My counselor and I joke about this all the time. When I first started recovery coaching, I was doing it all remote like this. This was pre-pandemic. And he's older. And he goes, you need to be in the same room. There's a connection thing there that you can't do it the way you're doing it. And I'm like, well, that doesn't work real good when I'm in Regina and my guy's in Houston or New York or Winnipeg, you know. Ah, suit yourself. And then the COVID happens. And about 2 months in, I said, well, your business must have gone in the crapper because you can't meet face to face. And he goes, well, this remote stuff works great. And instead of mad, I just laughed. You know what I mean? But it's not about being in the same room. It's, you said you work with energy healing. It's about energy. You know, you can have it over a Zoom call. You can have it over the phone, you know? So that kind of just goes back to us all working together and for the common good cause, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea, that's what we're here for. How we do it, I don't think really matters a whole lot.
Yeah. And I like that you bring up that support and sense of community, because that's super important. If we try to do this on our own, you really need support.
I wouldn't even try to do it on my own. Like my dad was, he quit drinking when I was 2. So I never saw him drink, but he never went to a meeting or nothing. And what the people in our circle have said is that's a strong man. And yeah, it quit and he never looked back. I couldn't do that. You know, these meetings, what I've realized in the meetings is I don't want to find out what life would be like if I didn't go to the meetings. You know what I mean? Like that works for me. Mm-hmm. And it did for him. So whatever, I'm a real whatever works kind of guy, you know, whatever makes you happy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I mean, I was terribly fearful of going to a grief coach. I mean, I did because I felt like I needed some support of some kind. And I didn't know there was such a thing. But when I found out there was, and I went there, I found out it helped a lot. You know, it just made it easier.
It's painful to think of the things that we've learned. Like I was saying to my life coach on the weekend, I said, when people come to me and they give me any myriad of problems, everything color on a rainbow, I've dealt with all of them. Like when my mom died of cancer, I had a nurse yank me aside in the hospital and go, don't be so hard on her. She's grieving her own death. And I'm like, who should have to do that? Who ever heard that that was a thing? But it is. And I'm glad that that nurse was very stern with me. And that's why, that's the language I understand. Because after a lifetime in sports, that's people yelling at you is what gets my attention. And so now, you know, our former president of the Rough Riders, Jim Hobson, is dying of cancer and he's been taken off his medication. I don't know how close you've been following that. Jim and I are very close.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I know exactly where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the odd text back and forth, but he's dying and he knows it. And I told him that I would wear a badge for me to carry on his leadership and the way he led. I want to do that. And he rolled me back, hit it with a heart. You know, but I know exactly where he's been. It's shitty that I had to learn all these things. And what my spiritual coach says was, she goes, but it's over. She goes, that's all over. She goes, it's time for you to turn and help others with what you've learned. I'm like, thank God. It has not been easy.
Yeah. And it is true. You do need to go through it yourself, I think, in order to be able to understand others. I mean, I did not understand grief until I experienced it.
Right. And it's painful lessons for sure. I was speaking to the RM Association, Rural Municipality. It was in Regina, but it was, well, all the rural municipalities were together in one room talking about mental health. And a lady came up to me after, and I feel really bad with the way I handled it. She's from Weyburn. And she goes, I wondered if you could help me with my son. And he's really struggling. Da-da-da-da-da. I said, sure. And I said, what's his deal? And she's like, he's got ADD. And I said, and? And she goes, well, that's all. And I blurted out, that's it? And I'm like, I'm sorry, but that's very manageable. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Mm-hmm.
Just, and God bless her for having the courage to come to me and say it, but I'm like, it's a big deal to her,
right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's getting back to what you said earlier, is not to compare each person's challenge, because their challenge is their challenge, right? And it's big for them.
Yeah, that was on me. I handled that poorly, but thank God wasn't offended or anything. But right. I'm like, it's you know, and then the other, like, I'm glad to have gotten this training and stuff. But as a lot of my mentors have said, they're like, you already know how to do it because of what you've been through, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think part of it is we don't talk about these things. You know, we deal with them kind of on our own because nobody really wants to talk about it or deal with it. And then, you know, it becomes a big thing because you're trying to deal with it yourself, and it's hard. It's not easy.
Well, and that's the thing where somebody like you or somebody like me, all we can do is tell people that we're available.
Mm-hmm.
The other have to take the first step. Now, having said that, that sounds hypocritical for me to say, because I faced an intervention. I was forced to go to an addiction counselor. I would never have done it. My whole family, that's not their thing. Like my mom, when she was dealing with her cancer and was given a 2 month to live diagnosis, which ended up being 11. But they asked her to see a grief counselor in the hospital. And she goes, I'm not nuts. But she's from that old school farm gal. She truly believed that. But we're like, Mom, nobody's saying that you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But mm-hmm.
That whole... And I, hey, you're sitting at Maple Creek. I spoke in Swift Current about, again, I do mental health and it's not grief specifically in addiction recovery, but this guy jumped up on a table. It's kind of ironic when you think about it, a farmer. And he goes, I don't want everybody to know that I'm dealing with stuff. I don't want to go into an AA meeting in my town because people will see my truck parked in front of the hall. And I said, you can Google all these things. And I, just to relate this to grief, I mean, I said, you can Google symptoms of stress, symptoms of anxiety, symptoms of depression, treatment of all these things. I've never tried it for grief, but I assume like all the resources are online. You don't need to leave your living room, is my point,
mm-hmm.
or your car, but what you do need to do is find help, because if you're stuck in your head, I just don't think there's a way out of that.
Yeah, well, it's really difficult. And isn't it sad that that fellow felt like he couldn't, he couldn't face his community if he had to do some type of intervention?
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's why I think I'm on the road that I'm on. And I get it, because that's the way I was raised. So mm-hmm. These guys, it's hard to leave. Back in our day, the cabaret, it's hard to leave the cabaret at 9 when it's just getting good, or it's hard to leave the rink on a Saturday night at 9:30, when the senior game's not over. But I'm like, I know it is, but you have to.
Yeah.
Do what's best for you. Or going to the coffee shop and having all the farmers sit together and talk about the lock of rain or the grasshoppers. Everybody together gets each other all worked up. You know what I mean? In that environment. But on the weekend, I was deep sea fishing on a boat with 3 guys for the first time in my life. And we were talking a lot about mental health and recovery. So I'm like, I just think this is the road that I'm on, that I did not plan any of this. I can tell you that right now. So I've got the ag in my back pocket. I got the big city thing in my back pocket. And now I'm tackling living by the ocean and a whole new group of people. But spreading the same message, because that's another thing about sports that I don't really care for. Everybody forever in the media looked at me being in Regina and going, oh, he must suck. He's in Regina. He's in Saskatchewan. And that really upset me because I knew that what I did. And I was a Saskatchewan kid. I was there because I wanted to be there, but in the addiction world, nobody cared where I was from. My friends are New York, Miami, LA, Montreal, Vancouver. Addiction's the same everywhere. Grief's the same everywhere. And those people never ever look down on me.
Right.
Because that's just the type of people that they are. But the sports world always did, and that bothered me. And that's part of why I don't really ever want to go back full time, because it just feels better working in this community,
Mm-hmm.
And I mean of what we're doing, not this community.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And yet, you're still able to follow your passion through sports. I mean, I see you've got your show and you're doing all of that, but it's just in a different way.
Yeah. Well, it's just times change. And I like coaching remotely. I do sports coverage differently than I used to. I don't need to be the voice of a team. I'm going to Super Bowl in a couple of weeks, doing my show from there, hosting a sober Super Bowl party there. So it's just part of what we do. And I guess that's the thing. Why I went and got the grief training, I guess, was because people were coming to me just like sobriety. And I kind of knew how to handle it. I didn't have a piece of paper that said I knew how to handle it. But I guess the training is important. Touch wood, I've never said anything that got me in trouble with somebody, but not really. I don't want to. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think there's a lot to be said about intention. When we're going in to help somebody, we're not intending to hurt. And so, I think that goes a long ways right there.
Yeah. Well, I'm hyper sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when I faced the intervention at the radio station in Regina and they put me into recovery, forced me into it, somebody said to me, oh, you know, your boss doesn't think you're going to be able to get sober. And that pissed me off so much that I'm like, I'll show him. It was probably the thing that anybody could have said to me, you know, but now I'm dealing with clients. I'm like, should I tell them that so-and-so doesn't think they can do this? And I've never actually said that to anybody because it was a painful thing to hear.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, when we talk about energy and being a little bit intuitive, you know, when things are going to be received well and when they're not. I think there's something about connecting and knowing somebody else and being able to help in that way. And yeah.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
How does the energy, what does that look like to you? Do you feel it? Do you see it? Because that's a world that I don't know too much about.
Yeah, for me, it's all feeling. It's really, I mean, I do have see images in my mind's eye, but for the most part, it's a feeling and a knowing. Yeah.
Like you hear words?
Yeah, like I hear messages and I just know. I somehow just intuitively know things.
Yeah. When did you realize that you can listen to that and not second guess it?
Just recently, actually, probably a year ago, I took some classes and I realized that I probably had this gift my entire life and just didn't realize it.
You'd been given intuition and you went against it, even though you knew you shouldn't.
Well, I think it was more like I just didn't know. You know, I thought those were my thoughts, right? I thought that was me coming up with that plan.
Yeah.
But now I know it's not.
Well, where that comes from, I don't know. I have the same thing. And mm-hmm. I had to like pursue around it and realize all of the things that you have. That's why people get upset because I'm a very public person. And as a broadcaster, I'm a loud person. And I think that rubs some people the wrong way. But I was doing an intervention on a young man. Well, he was in his late 20s, young enough. And in the middle of the intervention, his mom flipped from my side to his side. And I was like, you hired me to get him to go. And now you're siding with him? And she's like, yeah. And this, I turned to walk out and out of my mouth came Sylvie, her name. I said, you're going to love him to death. And I turned to walk, stopped. And she goes, go with him to her son. And I'm like, where the hell did that come from? I've never even heard that phrase before. You know what I mean? So it's like, this is not something that I'm consciously sitting there planning. Like you, there is nothing more intimidating than going into an intervention. Not sort of keep turning this around to that because we're here to talk grief, but that's scary stuff.
Yeah.
And you're going in a room with somebody that's unpredictably on substances and not in their right mind. You know, you can handle that. I think you can handle quite a bit of stuff in life.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Fascinating. This is a fascinating conversation. I could just go and go and go with you.
I keep going. I got time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you have, there's lots of things we could talk about, but do you have some advice, some good advice that you normally give people in grief that are just having a really hard time? What would you say?
It's something similar to the recovery thing is that you can't do it alone. And I would say asking for help is not a sign of weakness. Mm-hmm. It's a sign of, so that's it. I wouldn't give them any tips as to how to handle this on their own. I would say, look up somebody in the grief counseling, grief coaching, because there's a lot of people that do it. And, you know, go from there. I mean, I was talking to my life coach two Saturdays ago about what we do. And I said, nobody in our business is out to get you. And she goes, there are some crooks in it. And I said, wait, nobody in my circle is out to get you. If you know, if you were at this for nefarious reasons, you'd be punted out, or I would have nothing to do with you because you know what I'm saying is you can trust, I think, what who you look up.
Yeah.
You know? And it just starts with one conversation and go from there. But I'd say you can't, you shouldn't have to do it alone. There's people out there for this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's great advice. And I think that people, you know, if you just try something, you know, just try anything, if it makes you feel better, keep doing it, right? Like, it's like not to sit back and wait to heal, because you could be waiting a long time.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, you know, it's when I started this, I went deep healing journey literally over 2 years ago now. Cause I said to my gal, I said, it's on the weekend. I said, it's been 2 years since I saw you face to face, my life coaching girl. And what, she said to me at that time when we started, she goes, why are you an alcoholic? I said, oh, it's easy. My dad is, it's genetic. And she's like, I don't think so. She goes, we're going to work on why you drank so much. What is it about you that's in here? And I was like, ooh, I'm not sure I want to do that. That looking in the mirror thing, I would pass that along. The thing you don't want to do is the thing you need to do the most.
Yeah.
And I went to a Reiki healer. And by the way, like, what's it going to hurt? What is it literally? But I went to a Reiki master, and the first time I went, she did her whole thing. I didn't even know what to expect. I was told to go. And when it was done, I said, what do you think? And what do you have to say to me? And she said, run to what feels good and run away from what feels bad. She goes, I know that sounds really simple, but she goes, but in your case, just follow what feels good. And that's the biggest reason why I'm here and doing what I'm doing, because this is what I want to do, you know? Because we all, and that's the other thing is with, I could write down 30 sayings, like it's okay to visit the past. It's not okay to live there. Mm. You know what happened, and your mind's going to always, it's going to come up. You know, I go back to that humble thing. Some have dealt with it. They've all dealt with it in their own way, but I will guarantee you for them, it comes up every day because it was such a high profile event. Mm-hmm. Every day it comes up. And I'm sure your husband comes up in your own mind every day, but that's just thoughts for them. It's what's in the news, what's being talked about, especially living in Saskatchewan, right? Yeah. So they find a way to deal with that. And like I say, it's some have really moved on and some are still stuck like it's that day. And I don't know if they ever will move on. Mm-hmm. You know, it hasn't been easy or hard. It's just what it is. And that's, everybody grieves in their own way. Like when my parents died within a year, 11 months of each other, I missed a day of work each. And that was to eulogize them. But my way of doing it, dealing with it, was working. And I didn't ignore it. Like, I love my parents. My whole life, I dreaded the day my parents were going to die. I was just that kind of anxious person. But then when it happened, I never shed a tear. It's odd, you know, and it wasn't like I skimmed over it or anything. I guess I just dealt with it and moved on. But everybody has their own way. So don't judge other people for how they grieve, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess I just want to point out, you know, you keep talking about your coach. I have my coach. I mean, we're coaches and we have coaches. That really says something to people about how important it is to have someone else to talk to and to get advice from.
It's all ego. I mean, Tiger Woods, the greatest golfer ever, has a swing coach. Mm-hmm. Like, who would tell Woods how to swing a golf club? But he's got a coach. You know, that's all. Yeah, that's ego stuff, you know, and that's where mine helps me a lot in terms of how people deal with me or what they think of me. It doesn't matter because I used to have a large ego. I was not a good person. I'm not proud of the type of person I used to be, but the world smashed my ego into smithereens is gone. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Gone. And every day since has been better building back up. So I can't worry what people think that I'm out telling people, advising people what to do when I had all these horrible things. I was involved in these horrible, but it is what it is. I don't get hung up on it anymore. And that's with the help of other people showed me that road.
Yeah. Well, this has been absolutely amazing, Rod. I want to thank you so much for taking the time. And I'm looking at your background in Florida. Wow, I'm in Saskatchewan and it doesn't quite look like that, but it's just been an absolute delight to talk to you and to have this conversation. So thank you.
Well, thank you. You do a great job. I enjoyed it too. And if you ever need anything, let me know. I'll be reaching out to you probably. I got your contact info now, so
awesome.
Consider yourself warned. Okay. Thank you, Ann.
Thanks so much, and thanks everybody for watching, and bye for now.
Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Awaken Your Soul's Journey podcast. We hope that you have found solace, understanding, and inspiration as we explored the information and wisdom that will help you move forward on your own journey. I want to express my deepest gratitude to my special guests, experts, and you, the listener. Thank you for sharing your stories and wisdom. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please reach out. Make sure you hit like and subscribe. The Awaken Your Soul's Journey community is here to support you. Sign up for my newsletter at www.healingenergy.world or check out the links in the description below. Until we meet again, may you find peace, healing, and transformation on your own unique path. Sending you lots of love. Bye for now.